The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, delivering an unrivaled range of assets, inspect and repair services across the globe.
Hello and welcome to the Energy Week podcast. I'm Rebecca Curran. This week saw a row about beards break out on the platform at the centre of a major gas leak in the North Sea. Oil bosses gathered at an exclusive roundtable event in London to discuss potential hurdles facing the industry this year, and Donald Trump's tirade against turbines continues. On Monday, a row about beards broke out on the platform at the centre of a gas leak in the North Sea over claims US contractors flouted safety rules. Facial hair is banned on all gas platforms in UK waters. It's because gas masks need smooth skin to make a good seal. However, a photo recently released by platform operator Total has caused a storm after it showed a Wildwell control worker sporting a grey beard. Unions are slamming the move, saying it's beyond belief. Total are taking unnecessary risks on board the stricken platform. Oil bosses are warning of potential hurdles facing the industry this year. They gathered in London to discuss opportunities and risks for this year. Fears were raised over the UK's ability to compete with incentives being offered by the Norwegian government. The ongoing gas leak at the Elgin installation in the North Sea was also discussed. Peter Richards from GL Noble Denton spoke to Energy Week.
From the roundtable discussion that we conducted, there was a high degree of rising optimism specifically for the UK. I think the budgets and the recent budgets and the reaction to that, the feeling has been positive. So there is a more upbeat feeling. However, there was also a comparison to other markets around the world that the attendees at the roundtable felt that need to be considered, specifically with Norway. I think, you know, there was a high degree of rising optimism for the UK. I think the response from the budgets that our attendees found that there was a greater degree of confidence, certainly for the UK market. But I think the industry does need to look at and is looking at other markets around the world, specifically Norway. And there was a feeling from the participants at the roundtable debate that there's more favourable regimes, specifically with our Norwegian neighbours, that could attract more investment than into the UK and specifically the North Sea. So I think that's something that needs to be looked at. I think there were three other key areas that came up from the roundtable discussion. There was a view around energy price predictions. And I think, you know, there's political uncertainty in the Middle East, which could derail the global economy, which I think, you know, a lot of us already knew. And also with the growth and in essence that global gas glut and an increase in oil demand, the cost of these two resources may also become less connected in the future. So you're starting to see a split between the oil price and the gas price, which, you know, at one point were more level pegging in terms of when you saw an increase in the oil price, you start to see a follow through, you know, with gas prices as well. So that was really, I think, a second point. The third point, I think, is something that really is becoming far more acute. And I think from the roundtable debate, there was a really strong feel around skill shortages and what the industry is doing to address that issue. That was, you know, a major issue that came out in the research that we did, Big Spenders, at the start of this year. But all the participants at the round table, you know, recognise that there's a need to have accelerated learning that, within, you know, their own organisations on how they develop opportunities for their own employees. Also graduate intake as well was seen as a major area. But there's an immediate need for how you address the gap in workers in the 30 to 40s. And there was a discussion as well that we found at the round table debate, which was more around could the oil and gas industry start to bring individuals from other industries into the sector, which may start to plug that gap, which I think was an interesting, you know, viewpoint. Because the other challenge that I think the industry's got, and you only have to travel to, say, centres like Perth, which is actually becoming more Scottish when you're down in Perth, I mean Perth in Australia, when you're down there, there's a lot of expats resource from Scotland that are down there because there's now hotspots around the world, Brazil, Tanzania and Australia. So I think there's, you know, there's that point as well, which really needs to be addressed. And I think the fourth point that we saw from, you know, the roundtable discussion was really under the area of securing tomorrow's energy supply today. So how, with the continuing high price of oil and looking at alternative sources, how they can address some of that gap. Obviously, nuclear's had, and it was a big discussion point at the roundtable debate, you know, with the tragedy that happened in Japan and nuclear falling off the political agenda of a lot of countries. But you're then starting to see, you know, other plays of gas starting to open up, and particularly with the UK, looking at shale gas as a development, and will that follow some of the trends that you've seen in the North America markets? So that was really, I think, you know, the key points that we saw from the findings, which I think is starting to reinforce the point that the industry is in a strong place. There's a high degree of confidence in the industry, but there are areas that still need to be worked on, and particularly for a company like Chernobyl Denton and applying our skills to support the industry in doing that. And this sort of debate gives us a far greater insight into what's happening in the industry.
I mean, what do you speak about sort of rising optimism for activity in the UK and investor confidence? I mean, how do you think that recent accidents, such as the Total Elgin incident, which is still ongoing, how do you think that will impact, you know, that rising confidence that you speak about?
I mean, I think that there will always be and a continued and a right focus around safety. And safety for the industry. And I think that's where it comes back to the point about the confidence in the industry. In essence, we did this research last year, which talked about black swan events. So in 2011, we were reflecting back on the tragedy in the Gulf of Mexico. And, you know, that incident, which nobody could have predicted at that point in time, and that then dented, you know, some of the confidence in the industry at that stage and put safety far more into focus, and particularly looking at the processes and how operators basically conduct themselves in regards to deployment of their assets as well. And I think that's where the focus will start to come back to, which is the right focus that the industry needs to address on, which is really, you know, safety and the integrity of the assets, and then also the performance of the assets to make sure that it's, you know, it's efficient and it's getting you know, the most out for you know, from a resource perspective. But I think it does come back to, Rebecca, you know, safety really is one of the major focus drives that we'll see from an industry point of view. Will, you know, the Elgin incident derail confidence from an industry perspective? I think what it will start to do is refocus, you know, attention around that point around safety and making sure that the industry has the right processes and procedures in place to be able to tackle these sorts of these incidents.
Fantastic. And just finally, I mean, the positive points that you raise, I mean, do you think that the industry is kind of, it's bounced back quite quickly from George Osborne's shock windfall tax last year?
Has it bounced back quite quickly? Yeah, I think you've seen, I think, a global viewpoint. And I think if you look at this from a global perspective, and I think the beauty of the oil and gas industry is it is a true, you know, global industry in its nature. And so you see basically a shift from an organisation perspective where they can start to balance investments depending upon tax regimes that, you know, impact, you know, their operations, you know, regardless of, you know, geography. And also, I think, coming back to your point, you know, the industry bouncing back, you are still seeing, you know, continued demand, you know, for energy, you know, regardless of the markets that I think, you know, the operators are playing in. And also, I think, you know, there is that continued confidence in the industry, which I think, coming back to your point, and also the findings that we saw from the round table, I think governments across the globe need to make sure that there is that balance between, I think, the investment profile that they're putting in, and also, you know, the responses as well. And Rebecca, if I can just answer that question again, is that all right?
Yeah, sure, go for it.
Yeah, sorry. So your question was, it's bounced back from the optimism in the industry. So, yes, the industry has bounced back quite quickly. I think what you're now starting to see is, you know, further opportunities for exploration. I think technology's moved on, and we're starting to see continued developments in deep water explorations as well globally. And also, you know, looking at the North Sea opportunities, particularly gas. If you look at the UK, you look at shale as a discussion point in the UK from an opportunity perspective as well. And, you know, also I think, you know, there is a, as we've seen from the research and also the roundtable discussion, there is a general higher degree of optimism, which I think has been validated from the discussions that we've seen. However, there are areas where there are cause for concerns. So it is, I guess, continued cautious optimism with that confidence.
On Tuesday, the Finance Secretary welcomed Japanese investment in the renewable energy sector. John Swinney met senior executives of Mitsui, who have bought 25% of Global Energy Group, which owns the NIG fabrication yard on the Cromarty Firth. Speaking from Tokyo, Mr. Swinney told Energy Week it shows the strength of Scotland's offshore wind industry.
This is a further welcome investment by an international investor in the Scottish renewable sector, and the decision by Mitsui and company to invest in Global Energy represents another major step forward in developing the renewable opportunities that we have in Scotland. The success of our renewable sector will be dependent on the ability of government to bring together all of the different players to present a strong market proposition, and we've done that. But it also depends on private sector investment in taking forward this agenda, and Mitsui's decision is a very strong boost to that process.
How big an investment is this?
Mitsui have opted to purchase 25% of Global Energy Holdings, and the sum of what that represents in cash terms has not been disclosed by the company. But what it is a significant investment in the development of the facility at NIG, which for many years has lain dormant, but which will be able to attract and to develop new business opportunities and to create jobs for our citizens. Now, there's already over 1,100 people working in renewables in Scotland, and that number is only going to increase yet further as we see more investment being made by a range of investors in the future of this sector.
And does this send any message to the Scottish economy that you've got such a big investment from a Japanese company?
The development of the Scottish economy is essentially based on the marshalling of different investments to create a more optimistic climate for investment in Scotland. So the fact that we've had this investment from Mitsui, the fact that we've had investment from Kawasaki, the fact that we've had investment from GlaxoSmithKline in the Scottish economy, these are all indications of a commitment by the private sector to invest in the economy, signals that we can create new employment within Scotland, and indications that the prospects for the Scottish economy are continuing to improve. Now, we need to build on these particular investments and ensure that the atmosphere around the opportunities in the Scottish economy is strengthened yet further to create new jobs and opportunities for our people.
A controversial practice of drilling for gas, which can trigger earthquakes, is to be given the green light. Fracking was halted after it caused two tremors near Blackpool last year, but a government-commissioned report's recommending it can continue under careful controls. Graham Bentley from the Ribble Estuary Against Fracking Group told Energy Week he's worried it hasn't been thought through.
It's basically the industry moving forward and scaling up that we're concerned about. How is this going to be managed? Who's actually overseeing it? And who's going to be protecting the public if things go wrong?
A leading oil industry expert is backing the creation of a dedicated oil fund. Professor Alec Kemp from Aberdeen University gave evidence to a committee of MPs looking at what Scottish independence might mean for energy supplies. The SNP government has made repeated calls for a fund for oil revenues to help provide resources for long-term infrastructure investment. Professor Kemp told the Energy and Climate Select Committee the possibility of an independent Scotland could create additional uncertainty for North Sea oil and gas investment. Fresh talks aimed at averting strikes by fuel tanker drivers will be held next week. Unite union officials and bosses from six distribution companies will meet on Monday. Unite has also been given an extension to next Tuesday before it has to make a decision about calling industrial action. On Wednesday, Environment Secretary Richard Lockhead revealed work is due to begin on repairing the gas leak at the Elgin platform. Testing of seawater and sediment samples near Total's North Sea platform are showing no signs of marine contamination, according to the Scottish Government. Mr. Lockhead says it's good news, but he wants the company to get the leak repaired as soon as possible.
Now that we have at least some evidence that there's been a minimal impact on the marine environment through the testing of the fish stocks, we gave the results of that last week, and now the water and sediment, we now hope that the gas leak can now be stopped, and it's really good news that at long last we're finally hearing that the oil company are about to start putting the solutions into place. It's really important we're very vigilant and continue to assess any environmental impact. And it's good news that all the evidence so far shows there continues to be a minimal impact in the marine environment, with now the water, the sediment and the fish stocks all sampled. There is more testing to still happen, of course, and we'll give out the results as soon as we can on that.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, a leading energy support partner where safety and people always come first.
Donald Trump seizing on a renewable energy giant, dropping plans for offshore wind turbines in Scotland. Korean company Doosan have pulled the plug on plans to invest £170 million in a research and manufacturing plant near Glasgow. The US tycoon's using the news to boost his campaign against plans to build a wind farm near his Aberdeenshire golf course. In a letter to the First Minister, Mr. Trump says the turbines will turn our economy into a third world wasteland that global investors will avoid. He's due to give evidence at Holyrood's Enterprise and Energy Committee next week. George Soriel, the US tycoon's spokesman, spoke to Energy Week.
Well, it's really no surprise that deteriorating confidence in the offshore wind market has been cited as a reason for Doosan bailing out of this investment. Lack of confidence in offshore wind is something that you've essentially seen on a global scale now for quite some time. Whether it's Spain, whether it's Australia, whether it's Germany, whether it's Holland, whether it's multiple states around America, many people have failed with these wind farm investments simply because of the economics of them do not work. It's a very, very simple equation. If a business is spending too much money, or if it's spending more money than it actually earns, eventually it will go broke. That's what you have with wind power at the moment. I think it's universally agreed that in the UK, you're generally spending about £250,000 of subsidies to generate £150,000 of energy. Who pays for that £100,000 difference, that £100,000 loss, is the Scottish taxpayer.
Do you think the fact that, obviously we've seen in Holyrood today, Alex Salmond didn't announce this when it was first put forward by Doosan in December, do you think this is now him running scared?
Well, I'm not sure if it's a question of him running scared, but he should be concerned. Mr. Salmond seems to have placed a great deal of emphasis. His entire economic plan going forward seems to be centered on renewables. Now, I don't think anyone, certainly we at the Trump Organization, have nothing against the concept of renewable energy, but renewable energy must work. And in the case of wind power, Scotland already is 10 years behind the curve. Wind power has been experimented with, and it's failed in many different jurisdictions. So Alex Salmond, or the First Minister, really needs to take a look at his game plan and his focus on placing so much of Scotland's economic future in a technology that really doesn't work and actually loses money. I think it's something that it's not really a question of fear. It should be a question of concern. And there should at least be an open-mindedness on his part to put the brakes on and take a look at some of these reports that were coming out. Most recently, last week, a think tank in Canada came up with the same conclusion, that because of Canada's investment in mainly wind power, they're projecting a loss of 55,000 jobs over the next 5 years in Ontario. Now, that's very contrary to what the current Scottish government has been telling the public, that these types of investments will create jobs. They don't, because they're driven by public subsidies, which really amounts to taxpayer money.
Just to play devil's advocate a little bit here, the Doosan plan had promised something like 1,700 jobs. Surely the Trump Organization isn't welcoming the news that these jobs will now not be available.
Well, we have a vested interest, obviously, in Scotland. We've made a significant investment here, so our interests are now aligned. In order for us to do well, Scotland needs to be doing well. So obviously, if it's true, if there is any investment that results in a net loss of jobs, that's not something that we're terribly happy with. However, I think there is a false economy created with these promises that wind power creates jobs. They do not create jobs because, by and large, they are funded by public subsidies. And more importantly, It's a technology that loses money. The economics of wind power simply don't work. You're spending more than what's recouped in generated electricity. Irrespective of what the Scottish government may say, the simple fact is when the subsidies run out, wind dies. And that's happened all over the world.
With Mr. Trump due to give evidence to Holyrood next week, is this announcement well-timed?
Well, it's certainly interesting that this announcement came, and it's not really a matter of timing. This is something that our organization and many other organizations have already publicly stated for quite some time right now. Simply, again, the economics of wind don't work. Wind is not free. Wind is supported now by public subsidies. We went through these identical cycles in the United States years ago, as have other countries. And eventually, when you're spending more than you generate, you go broke. So there's really no surprise. And I actually would expect that you'll see many more similar announcements as the private sector is now realizing that it really can't make a safe, sound investment in wind technology. So essentially, when is the public sector going to realize this and stop wasting billions every year on something that doesn't work?
Mr. Trump's warned that in pursuing this green agenda, Scotland risks becoming a third world economy. I mean, just how stark and how likely is that?
Well, I want to be very clear that this is not an indictment of renewable energy. The concept of renewable energy is a great concept. The concepts of reducing carbon emission are obviously concepts that everybody believes in. But the technology has to work. And in this case, the technology doesn't work. And there's even a lot of question as to whether or not wind turbines are really green and really environmentally friendly. The visual impact of them is devastating. The process to manufacture them certainly is not environmentally friendly. Enormous amounts of fossil fuels are necessary to create these massive steel and concrete structures. But the worst part of it, they're going up everywhere. These applications now are flying through the planning process, and even if they're rejected at the local level, they end up on Fergus Ewing's desk, and he approves them. I mean, you name the area we know very well is golf and leisure. You almost can't name a golf course that is not blighted by wind power or about to be blighted by wind power. Whether it's Turnberry, whether it's Royal Aberdeen, whether it's St. Andrews, these are some of the country's most prestigious assets. The golf experience, being able to play links golf in the home of golf, is something that's uniquely Scottish. It's really an asset that should be cherished. To recklessly throw up electrical industrial turbines and really blight these assets is insanity.
Convener of the committee, Murdo Fraser, MSP, says it's bad timing.
This is very disappointing news for the renewable sector in Scotland. The Scottish Government have been pinned against hopes on offshore developments like the sort of offshore wind turbines that companies like Doosan were trying to build, particularly in the North Sea. They're pulling out because of market conditions. They're worried they can't get the finance. It sends a very worrying signal across the sector. We expect Donald Trump to be saying that he does not believe there's any future for wind turbines on or offshore. He doesn't believe it's an industry that has a future or should be supported by government. The fact that already we are seeing private investors pulling out does suggest that Donald Trump is leaning on an open door.
Alex Salmond faced criticism during First Minister's questions that he didn't tell MSPs when Doosan made their decision back in December. But he says the company still employs 1,300 people here, and he's maintaining the wind industry is still expanding.
You don't make company announcements for them. If they wish to make an announcement, well, if Doosan make an announcement to their supply chain, then they have the right to do that. The reason that we are supportive of Doosan is that they employ 1,300 people in Scotland, and the research and development on their worldwide skill centre for boiler making is continuing that investment. And we also expect Doosan to make more investments, important investments in Scotland in the future. Many companies are investing in offshore wind, and many of these companies are investing in Scotland.
One thing can be absolutely sure, as that succession of announcements is made and the thousands of jobs it's going to bring to the economy, Joanne Lambert won't welcome a single one of them.
A former Director General of the CBI is warning only sheer hard work will rescue the country from economic decline. Lord Digby Jones was speaking as northeast firm Viking Seatech announced restructuring to grow their business and increase operations overseas. Speaking to North Sound News, Lord Jones says Aberdeen's key to boosting the UK's economy.
Well, I was speaking at the Australian Oil and Gas Exhibition in Perth, Western Australia, in February. And I came across Viking Seatech, and they were there, banging the drum for Britain, banging the drum for Scotland, banging the drum for Aberdeen. And they're fabulous and innovative products, and there they were, not only exhibiting, but really doing well, and so were so many small, innovative, value-added businesses in this part of the world. And there they were on the other side of the world waving the flag. And so I bothered to meet Bill Bayliss. He bothered to meet me. We gave each other a bit of time. And he said, come up and have a look. So their story, of course, is the story, isn't it, of British value-added innovation. You know, if you think about putting this chain and you've got to put it over pipelines and over cables, you've got to help getting this stuff out of the ground. And that is where Britain scores. And then all around the world, whether it's Brazil, whether it's South Africa, whether it's Indonesia, whether it's Australia, doesn't matter where it is, the North Sea, everywhere, wherever they need this skill, then Viking Seatech will be there. And so I thought, well, I'll come and have a look. But more importantly, of course, I want to celebrate their success, because if we're going to get ourselves out of the dippy-do country, we've got to generate jobs. And we've got to make money to pay the tax, to build the schools and hospitals and pull down the deficit. It's not rocket science. Well, the only way we're going to do it is business is going to have to do two things. It's going to have to work hard. The people of Scotland, the people of Aberdeen, the people of Britain have got to work hard. Secondly, we've got to be skilled. We've got to do stuff which low-cost economies can't do. And that's what Viking Seatech does. It's what so many of the businesses in Aberdeen do. And it's, frankly, where Britain is going to succeed or fail.
I suppose the announcement from Viking is just one of many that shows the northeast oil industry is still very much alive and kicking.
Oh, yes. Well, it is. And you see, what's interesting about it, it's the support services industry, isn't it? They go out there, get it out the ground and sell it. The one thing that you have no control on is price, because oil has a global price. And the vulnerability of that, the good thing is when the price is up, countries make loads of money. When the price is down, they don't. If you actually do the support stuff, if this was 1849 in California, it would be sell the prospectors the shovels as opposed to going and try and dig for gold. If you do that, of course, they'll always want your shovels. And within reason, you can dictate the price because no one else does what you do. And so there's loads and loads of small businesses employing just a few people, all of them. Innovative, value-added, doing their bit. And Viking Seatech's one of those, and I take my hat off to them, frankly.
Still talking about energy, I wonder if I can catch you on the renewable aspect. There's a lot kicking off in Scotland that Doosan have pulled out of plans to build a renewable plant in Scotland. They were originally planning 1,700 jobs. What is your take on the Scottish Government's agenda for renewable energy to be powering Scotland?
Well, I think the Scottish Government, and remember, I don't do party politics. I'm a crossbench peer. I'm non-aligned. I've never belonged to a political party. In fact, I'm the only minister the country's ever had that didn't belong to the party government when he did the job. So my comments on this are not about the SNP, Labour, Tory, Liberal. It's not like that at all. This is what I would call a business take on it. One of the problems, if you like, the dichotomy, I think, that the executive in Scotland and indeed the UK government have got is they've got this green agenda. They're trying to drive the whole thing down a sustainable energy route, wind farms, solar, tidal. They're trying to put, carbon reduction targets into business. All of that is extremely laudable. And, we want to live in a world that's cleaner and we want to preserve what we've got. Trouble is, it's extremely expensive. And people are not going to change their habits. People are not going to invest unless governments meet them halfway on the cost. It's very difficult to do that, whether you're France or Germany, whether you're America or Britain, when countries haven't got the money at the moment. And we all know that. And so if you are investing in that, if you're a company investing in that, look at the way the German companies pulled out of doing the nuclear power stations just the other week. They didn't do it because they don't believe in Britain, and they didn't do it because they don't want to do it. They did it because back at the ranch in Germany, they got problems. So similarly, if you are investing in green in Scotland, you're going to say, well, you know, am I going to be met halfway on this? Or are people, politicians going to change the goalposts because they run out of money? I mean, where are we? And of course, the Scottish economy relies on the oil, which is the exact antithesis of the sustainable agenda. So they're caught by saying, well, we want the wealth that the black stuff provides, but then on the other hand, we don't want all that, because that's fossil fuel and we want all the sustainable. It's a real problem for a politician because, if you like, they've got the one foot on the harbour, one foot on the ship, and the boat's leaving port. So at the end of the day, I take it as a blip. It's not catastrophic. It's very sad. But Scotland's not alone in this. It's happening all over the developed world. It's because governments haven't got the money to go where their mouths are on the green agenda. Does that mean in 30 years we'll look back and it won't have happened? No, it'll happen. But it's just going to take a bit more political will, but more importantly, business, which at the end of the day, you know, business is the only generator of wealth. I mean, business is the people who create the wealth, who reward the shareholders who pay tax, who keep it in the business and pay tax, or employ people who pay tax. So unless businesses are there to create the wealth, you don't get the tax, you don't get the money to spend on the green agenda. So it's none of this can be seen in isolation. It's got to be seen as a complete menu of political will, business innovation, and a public appreciation.
And despite the price of petrol reaching a record high on Friday, there's no guarantee it won't increase. It's gone above 142p per litre. That's about 10p higher than at the start of the year. Brian Matterson is the chairman of RMI Petrol, which represents thousands of retail motor businesses. He says volatile wholesale prices make the future hard to predict.
They did come down, but last night they went back up again. So it does depend on where the wholesale prices are steadying at over the next few days. And frankly, none of us can really forecast that.
And that's the Energy Week podcast. I'm Rebecca Kern.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stark Technical Services, delivering asset integrity solutions to the global energy industry.